just wanted to mention that I may look like I got beat up. It's actually some treatment I'm doing for some precancerous spots on my skin that were detected during an annual dermatology exam. I thought this would be a great opportunity to just remind everybody out there to get checked now, especially if you're over 40 and go to fires. Many people have no symptoms of prostate and other cancers, and cancer will not just go away if you simply ignore it. Depending on your age, your sex, your doctor's recommendations, get your prostate, skin, and lungs checked, and schedule your periodic colonoscopy and/or mammography. Take a look at the pictures of your family and get checked for them. Early detection can help get ahead of cancer before it becomes a bigger problem. Make your appointment and get checked now. Welcome to Responder Resilience. Along with my co-host Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMT, I'm David Dashinger. We'll be speaking with Linda Rust, LCSW, and Karen Sarnicki about the unique perspective and challenges of being a significant other to a first responder. And my colleague Bonnie will be adding her viewpoint as a responder who's married to a civilian. So we invite you to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're also on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Apple Podcasts, and bbsradio.com. That's our website where we have all of our past episodes. So we'll be right back to speak with Linda, Bonnie, and Karen right after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers. With vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB. So we'd like to welcome Linda and Karen to the show. Just to read a little bit of their background, Linda Rost, LCSW, has been working in the field of psychological trauma for 35 years. She maintains a private practice in Wilton, and she works with adults and adolescents. She's also a certified EMDR therapist, as well as an approved consultant in the same therapy. So she's currently one of the coordinators of the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team, where she provides education, training, treatment for first responders. Karen is an elementary school teacher. She's been teaching for 26 years at the same elementary school she went to as a child. And for 6 years, she taught first grade, and for the last 20, she's taught second grade. Karen's husband of 20 years is Kevin. He's a captain in a Connecticut fire department with 34 years of service, 27 career, and 7 as a volunteer. And they met at the fire department 32 years ago. So welcome to Responder Resilience, Karen and Linda, and nice to see you, Bonnie. So let's start with you, Karen. Because we're just kind of learning about your connection with Kevin. We just kind of talked about how long you've known each other. Can you talk a little bit about the way you met, the circumstances, and how that's kind of led to where you are now?
Sure. Everything from the beginning till now is pretty much fire department related. a mutual friend of ours was a volunteer at the time when I met Kevin, who was also a volunteer, and the friend was driving me home, had to stop at the fire department to pick something up. Kevin was there doing his volunteer hours, and we got to talking, and soon the friend was out of the equation. It was just Kevin and I, and the rest is kind of history. And I was 17 years old, and we've been together for 32 years, but married for 20.
So you've seen it all, right, from the volunteer side to the career side, and so you've been through a lot together, no doubt.
Absolutely.
And Linda, so you work with first responders, and do you work with responders, significant others as well?
Yes, absolutely. Bonnie and I together really felt that there was a strong need to provide a support system for spouses. I'm going to refer to wives, and I don't mean to sound sexist, but we've had all wives in our group, so that's why I'm going to say it that way. If a male significant other came to our group, he would be more than welcome. Probably have a really good time with all those ladies. We felt that a group setting would really be helpful because just like providers sometimes feel isolated with what they're carrying, so do the spouses.
And how does that help the responder when the spouse is getting some kind of support or working with a therapist? What does that do for the responder or for the relationship?
One of the biggest issues that we've heard in the group is how to manage the transition time. When the firefighter comes in the door, does the wife throw the baby at him immediately? She's been alone with the baby all day long. She's had it up to here. And most of these guys need a chance to breathe, a chance to walk, to take a shower. And if we can help explain that to the spouse, that it isn't about her, it isn't about the marriage, it isn't pushing her away, it's need they have to chill out.
Yeah, we on an earlier episode we had a couple who term it re-entry time. It's
Right.
really just an agreement between the parties where that the responder comes home from work and has to, or is kind of given the window to decompress, to kind of change, shift gears out of responder mode into home life. Yeah.
Right. It's also helpful to know what trauma really is like and what the symptoms are. We had one woman who said, you know, he used to come home so grumpy and so disconnected. And I thought it was about our marriage. And it wasn't at all. It was about the last three calls he had been in. So if they have a better understanding of what trauma looks like and the symptoms and how to manage it, it's very, very helpful to both parties.
And I think you're touching on something, and I invite you all, maybe we'll start with Bonnie. I invite you all to chime in on this, and that's coming home from a shift, sleep deprived, and how that can affect, how grumpy or nice or, actually civil we are with our spouse as a responder, how we are when we enter the door after that shift. So, Bonnie, what's your perspective on that?
I think it absolutely is difficult on the spouse and the responder. And I've seen it time and time again where it's hard for the responder because you're coming home from the unknown. You're coming home from being mentally on for 12, 16, 24 hours. And the minute you open the door, your family pounces on you because they've been missing you those 12, 16, 24 hours. And then what happens is if you're tired or you say, you know, just give me a few minutes, then you see the disappointment. And I think that's also really hard. So if the first responder is already feeling overwhelmed or under stress from what they're coming home from, now they've just disappointed their family. You know, so it's going to take longer to come out of that and then to re-enter again because also the family feels wounded, right? The spouse, the kids, it might be, oh, why didn't daddy miss me? You know, he came home mad at me rather than being excited to see me. So, one of the things that I try to give suggestions about with clients is what can you do before you get home? Because I do think it's important to have practices when you get in the door to try to transition or re-enter if you can, but sometimes it's really hard to do that or it just isn't set up that way. So I try to encourage them to do something before getting home, whether it's listening to music or XM comedy station in the car on the way home. Some people will sit and tap in their car before they leave the department, EMDR tapping. So whatever you need to do, I think it can be both before home and at home.
Great. Karen, do you have any sort of practical tips of things that have worked for you and Kevin for that reentry time or pre-reentry time?
Well, it's a little difficult in our situation because Kevin works in the town where we live, so the commute's 5 minutes. So there's not a lot of time for Kevin to practice any of those things before he blows in and he works a second job, which he immediately starts within half an hour of when he gets home. And I'm leaving for work as well at the same time. And our daughter's leaving for school. So I don't have any suggestions of how to handle that reentry time, because for us, there is really no time. And that is when I have to, you know, just let it all out of what is needed or what needs to be
like,
shared.
Like a quick data dump kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. No, and I understand completely the need for that time to decompress from the shift that was just had. But, you know, he could be gone again for another, if he's working both jobs that next day, he could be gone again another 24 hours. And if there's something that needs to be communicated, I have to jump in, you know.
Linda, have you come across any tips or hacks that work for couples that they have this, you know, kind of challenge of limited reentry time?
Well, I just want to say on Karen's behalf, when she comes in the door, I want to give our spouses here equal time and credit. So you need that time as well. And I think for people like Karen in this situation, you know, they tend to put their spouse first and relegate their needs to the back. And, you know, knowing you as I do, I think that you're that kind of warm, nurturing person who will put other needs first. I think that if you can, again, not at the risk of repeating myself, to have the spouse understand and to be willing to give their husband, wife, whatever, the time to decompress, and then agree to maybe have, if you can, I know you can't always, but you also touched on another very important point, because most of these firefighters have second jobs. So they're under an enormous amount of pressure, as is the family. And so it's a tough road to hoe for everybody, I think, in the family. But I think what works, if you can, to schedule a time when you are going to be by yourselves. If you can have a date night, if you go out Saturday night, maybe it can't be every week, but to just have the time without kids, without phones, and that's hard. I know that's really hard for a first responder, but to the best of your ability, try to unplug. And I think that helps a bit.
I think the other thing that could be helpful is to try to find a little bit of time each day, even when they're on duty. Maybe there's a gap where they're not busy. If you could schedule not just once a week, but maybe try to do a touch point every day. And that way you both feel your needs are met in terms of communication.
What about having an offline conversation? So, you know, on an off day when everybody's kind of relaxed and in a, you know, in a good uncharged state of mind, would it work to have a conversation between the spouse, maybe even bring the rest of the family in to say, you know, this is what happens when, you know, daddy, mommy comes home from their shift. And, you know, we want to kind of have that conversation ahead of time so that everybody's expectations are kind of tempered by reality. Is that something that could be effective? Linda?
Yes, I think that's a really important point. Kids need to be brought in into it too, so they don't harbor feelings of guilt. You know, oftentimes the children are told, shh, be quiet, don't say anything, daddy's sleeping, can't wake him up. And It's surprising how many of the first responders and the children of first responders bring that into the therapy. So, yes, I think that's very important. I think everybody needs to know what to expect during reentry. I wish I had a way of communicating that to my cats.
Yeah. Bonnie, any thoughts on that? Do you say something that you've seen used or that you've actually used yourself?
Yeah, even for myself, I try to be as open as possible with communication, you know, with my family. And sometimes, even if it has been a particularly difficult day, I will reach out before coming home just to set the expectation of, look, I'm really tired, or today was really, really tough. And I'm really going to need some extra time on my own. And some people need that and some don't. But I have found for myself as an EMT, I do need a little bit of time by myself before I can jump back in. But that's something that I don't think I need to feel guilty about, right? So it's a give and take. But then once I get what I've asked for and what I need, then I need to be able to jump all in and be there for them, because even though their problems or what they're looking for, it doesn't meet the intensity sometimes that we've been dealing with on a shift, but it doesn't mean it's any less important.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, have you tried sort of having these kind of conversations offline and maybe, you know, coming up with ideas about expectations and reality and how that all kind of can be preset in terms of having a little heads up ahead
sure.
of time?
We have done that where Kevin and I have that discussion, and then I say that I think it'd be a good idea to bring our daughter into the conversation. And, you know, we have like a pre-conversation before we bring our daughter in. And I think it helps also build mutual respect within our little family, because it's just the three of us, you know, and we can share with each other what we need and how it all affects us differently. And, you know, even my daughter coming in from a long day and she's having, you know, time where she's 15, you know, she's just like, back off, mom and dad, you know, that's something too. Whereas, you know, just one of us, the mom and dad coming in and saying, okay, I need you guys to back off for a little me time. She needs it too. So it's, you know, not just all about dad and him coming home and, you know, things like that. So it's definitely reasonable to have that conversation and beneficial from what we've experienced.
Great.
I think to bring it back to the idea of the group is really helpful too, because inevitably, no matter how hard you try, there are going to be hurt feelings. There's going to be resentment. And I think that spouses need a place to talk to each other about this with no fear of judgment. Everybody's basically in the same place.
Or competition.
Yeah, right. And firefighters take up a lot of, no pun intended, they take up a lot of oxygen. They can be very dynamic and charismatic. And hello, we're here too. I think that needs to be acknowledged. And, you know, there are often other issues. Like you said, competition. We had someone in our group who had to leave her job because her husband got a promotion in another state. And there was a question of, well, you know, whose job really is more important here? That it's helpful to share that with people who are in your shoes. Just as firefighters say, you can't understand what we go through because you're not in our shoes. I say the same thing for spouses. Those who, most of them, I think, are really good at compartmentalizing the fear of having their loved one go out on a call. Am I going to see you again? Are you going to come home alive in one piece? I think they're pretty good at dealing with that. But there are other things that arise, including severe hurricanes and storms, and the power goes out. And, you know, baby Johnny has a fever of 102, and your husband's not home. And to be able to reach out to a network of people who get that and be able to rely on support, I think, is really critical.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
I really give significant others so much credit. I don't think they get enough credit by us as a first responder community, because without you, we wouldn't be able to do our job. And the other piece of it is that you aren't just married to a person, you're married to our profession in a way that I don't think most other professions could really understand or match. And so I think for people to recognize that and to know that it's a lot for their spouse and to really thank them when you have the opportunity is so important.
Yeah, it's what you're saying makes so much sense because, you know, from the responder's perspective, you know, they've just done a shift and done all these extreme, you know, badass things, you know, whatever it is, a couple of MVAs, mm-hmm. structure fire, cardiac arrest, and they walk in the door and, you know, they're hearing about the toilet that stopped or, you know, the screen that needs to be fixed. And so there's, you know, it's like a big shifting of sort of like scale, right, of what's important, what's really, you know, urgent. And so we were touching on this, and I'd just like to go a little deeper.
Can I just comment on what you just said, David?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm not trying to bash firefighters. I absolutely love firefighters. I've had crushes on them since I was 3 years old, I think. But oftentimes, it's not the firefighter who comes home and fixes the broken toilet and, you know, has to do all the chores. It's often the spouse because it has to be done immediately. You can't wait for your spouse to come home. And so you're doing all the scut work a lot of the time. And people look at firefighters the way they look at firefighters, you know, heroes and larger than life. And again, here's the spouse kind of in the shadow all the time.
And along those lines, so the spouse is also, you know, I'm not sure if they feel obligated to do this, but they may feel obligated to be strong for their responder, to kind of like, you know, give them that emotional support. Mm-hmm. They're coming home after a rough shift, right? We see a lot of things out there that are, you know, difficult to deal with, and then we're bringing it home with us sometimes. So Karen, where does this kind of fall in terms of feeling obligated to be strong and, you know, everything's okay, I got it under control, you know, you had a rough shift, I'll handle this stuff. What's that like from your perspective?
Well, you're in a relationship, right? So, you know, you're partners in that and you've decided to be partners in life. And for me, I haven't known anything different. I mean, I met him mm-hmm. pursuing, you know, a career in firefighting and what that meant. You know, I know volunteer hours are a bit different from career hours. So I knew what I was getting into. And, you know, I just learned that way of life that he's going to be gone for however long. And if, you know, we're living together or we were married or something, I'd be the one at home having to do the tasks and the jobs before children, after, you know, during, with children. And that's just a decision you make. And if your relationship is strong enough to handle that, then it just flows, you know? So I hope that answers the question a little
bit.
Yeah, sure.
I think something I've seen, David, as a therapist is just how sometimes the spouse or the significant other will make a choice inside themselves to protect the responder from their issues. So it's not a conscious choice to not share, but I think that there's somewhere in there where they don't want to add to the stress. Mm-hmm. And so they end up shouldering a lot of their own emotionality to themselves. And we saw that, Linda, in our significant other group. Mm-hmm. And once people were together, they were able to really let it all out finally. Mm-hmm. so I think that's a piece that we all need to look at more as therapists, as first responders, as significant others. How can we help that? Because the first responders are helping the world, but there's some neglect going on sometimes, you know, with family.
It brings another thing, and let's play with this in this conversation. So we're also, usually it's men and women in these relationships, and as we know, men's brains and women's brains work differently. You know, we have different needs and wants and ways of talking about things. So how does that enter into the equation? Like, you know, what women want versus what men want, plus the responder spouse relationship. Linda, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't want to sound sexist. I think there are some differences. I think women tend to be freer to express their emotions and want some emotionality back. And men have a harder time, although I want to say that I think that's changing. And I think with the right kind of encouragement, men will be more expressive. But yes, there are differences. And Bonnie touched on a good point. It's mutual protection. Oftentimes the first responder doesn't want to lay on the terrible experience that he just went through onto his loved one. He doesn't want that in her brain. Mm-hmm. But he needs to be able to communicate that. I don't want to tell you this. It's really awful. I'm going to go debrief with Bonnie. I don't want it. I don't want this on you. But he needs to say that so that it doesn't feel like rejection or being shut out.
Karen, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think if you know your spouse also, it's easier to get over that hump of, I definitely agree that women show emotions a lot more than men because men feel like they're the providers. And I'm not saying all men or most men, just some, my man, you know, is more task oriented and things like that. And so, and in his profession, they're trained to solve tasks and problems, and that emotional piece is not there. So it's very hard to transfer that in the home life, you know. So yes, they can, you know, maybe learn some strategies to show that showing emotions could go a long way. You know, I think they do that in the profession with the people that they meet on calls and things like that. And I often wonder, well, can't you show that to me, you know, or at home? Like, you're so soft and empathetic, you know, and you come home and where was that when I was telling you the story of what happened today, you know? So it's tough. But sure, like Bonnie was saying, you just make that decision inward, like, all right, well, that's just how it is, you know. It's not a sign of disrespect, even though it might feel that way. It just is what it is.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
The firefighter tends to have two families, whereas the spouse has one family, generally speaking, and there's some competition between the two families. I think what we need to impart to our firefighters is really, unless there are some severe issues present, it's biological family first. Yes, you love the guys and your brothers for the most part, but family comes first, and that sometimes gets shoved aside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a salient point that we talked on this other episode, where at some point the fire career, whatever career, is going to be over, and what is still there when you leave the job is the family, mm-hmm. and you know, ideally it's still there, but that's why it's so important to make it a priority for sure. Bonnie, any thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, that kind of brings me to thinking about divorce and separation, which is, it's the sad part and the fallout of everything that we're talking about. But I think when the lack of communication is there, or quite frankly, when someone is never home, there's a vacancy there. And if there's an emotional vacancy when they return, then that's going to bleed out into whatever relationship there is. And then the time they do have together can be conflict ridden. You know, and I think that's really, really sad, because no one gets into their relationship and their career and says, okay, I want my career to be the driver and I want my spouse to be in the back seat. I mean, I don't think anyone actively says that, but it's what accidentally happens, right? Mm-hmm. So if we know that, let's raise awareness with the first responders, with therapists, like, how can we intervene now so that you don't end up going down that road? And I think that these conversations are good for that reason. It gets us thinking about it, you know, and what can we do differently?
Along those lines, what do you think is the reason EMS has such a high divorce rate?
So EMS is very interesting. For a lot of us, we call it the land of the misfit toys, right? So a lot of people who've had difficult childhoods, attachment trauma, maybe medical issues in their family of origin as children, it brings them to EMS. And particularly in EMS, a lot of people tend to be isolative. Maybe they've had multiple relationships that don't work out, or the hours, quite frankly, don't lend themselves sometimes to a healthy, happy relationship. So I think that I don't have statistics to back it up, but police and fire tend to have a little bit more of a family feel. You know, that's not to say that EMS doesn't ever, but we're sort of always that stepchild off to the corner. And I think that that translates into the individuals in the profession too at times.
I had to pull my wife before we did this show just to get her perspective, being the spouse of first a volunteer responder, and then as I transitioned into the career world, she was the spouse of a career firefighter. And something that she mentioned was, so much of our social life revolves around the firehouse and the fire department and the union, and the spouses, you know, I guess maybe willingly, or maybe, you know, just because they want to be with their spouse, they get drawn into this whole new world of social connection, parties, events, funerals, promotions, whatever. There's really, it's a pretty active social life just within a fire department. So Karen, did you find yourself spending a lot of time with these fire department social events? And if so, was it an easy transition for you?
It was easy. My husband's in a smaller department, so there isn't a ton of opportunity to have a lot of the social gatherings. There definitely are some, or were some, more so when the children were younger, of the guys in the department. And now that the children are older, there's not, you know, the Christmas party is now like five kids, where it used to be a good dozen or so, you know. So it was very easy. It was welcoming and fun to see that you could have this other community of people to support you. But I think in the larger departments, it's probably even more, there's more of an opportunity for that. And I would think that people would enjoy that and enjoy not just the social fun aspect of it, but having others around you to feel like that second family, even though I know at times it draws away from the, you know, immediate family.
Linda, what do you see in your practice? Is that something that's a positive?
No, not necessarily, actually. I think in some of the larger departments, they can be extremely political, and there are factions, there are cliques within the department. I think one of the reasons we had trouble sustaining the spouses group was some of the firefighters felt that their wives would be sitting around and bitching about them and exhibiting their dirty laundry in public, and they didn't want that. They did not encourage their wives to attend. One of our colleagues who's extremely gregarious and just fun-loving is married to someone in a larger department. And she said, you know, after all these years, not one of them is a real friend of mine. I don't socialize with them. Don't see them outside of these work parties, which I hate going to, but feel compelled to out of loyalty. So it's not always cozy the way.
I agree with that, Linda. You know, I know that it's an opportunity to be social, but it doesn't really go very deep. It's just kind of surface, and it's for the function, and you're getting, you know, you're having a nice time chatting and stuff, but, you know, calling to meet for coffee or take a walk or, you know, help with a child or something, it never really took off from where we are.
Which leads me to say that I think Karen was the perfect, we used to call her the first spouse, facilitator for our group, because you were willing to be spontaneous and call the group members. Bonnie and I weren't even in town, and say, let's go for a hike. And for whatever reasons, it didn't matter, but I think that's one of the main points of having a group of supportive people. Let's go out and have some fun. I mean, you're allowed to have fun too. The guys go down to the bar, all know that, after shift, and have a couple of beers together. Mm-hmm. Our spouses hang out and having fun together as well. I think it's very important. I think fun is important, especially after the last 2 years that we've just been through.
You know, and sometimes when the attendance was low in our group, the three of us would meet for hours and try to figure out why. And one thing I think I always wondered, but really couldn't prove, was, do some people not want to come because it means another hour they have to spend thinking about first responder world, thinking about the firehouse, thinking about his job. Maybe they don't want their social life to be based on their husband's profession. And maybe there's something to that, because I do think first responders in general, when they socialize, it's with each other, right? When they go to a wedding, it's another fire guy's wedding, right? When the medics go skiing for the weekend, who do they go with? The other medics, the cops. I mean, it's kind of the same. So I wonder almost if the spouses just want their own life with this person outside of fire. And I, quite frankly, I could understand it.
Yeah.
And looking at this from a different perspective, and I think you can all probably speak to this, we're talking probably more about career responders, but then there's a different dynamic with volunteer responders. In my volunteer career, I had the pager, or multiple pagers, one for EMS, one for fire, and we could be out to dinner, we could be out doing some sporting event with the kids or any number of things. The pager goes off and I'm like, I want to go, you know. How does that play out in the relationship dynamic for you, Bonnie?
I could probably talk a lot about that. I could talk about being the 24/7 leader of an EMS agency volunteer for 2 years with the radio and the pager 24 hours a day. You know, my friends joke with me, you know, that radio is just like your purse. It's your accessory. It goes everywhere with me. Yep. That's hard for my family sometimes. Because sometimes they have to stop talking or stop midstream with something they're doing just so that I can listen to what's happening in case I'm needed. A lot of people can punch in and punch out at work, or a lot of career people, they can stick that radio in the charger and walk out the door. I've got to bring it home. It's next to my bed. I mean, there's really not much of a separation. There are times, where you need to develop good boundaries. That's another part of the discussion that has to happen. Everyone needs a break, right? So maybe there's scheduled time, or you kind of promised your spouse, we're going to have dinner tonight and the radio is going to be in the other room and it's not going to be sitting here right next to my ear. You know, so sometimes you have to be creative, especially for people that are in leadership roles, you know, getting other leaders to listen in so they can kind of give their spouse a break. But that's definitely disruptive to a family. To have this other thing just randomly intrusive all the time.
Right. That's the part of it that's like the X factor, the randomness of it, where if you know if you're on shift, you're on shift, you're there to take calls, and you may be called back for some general alarm or some special incident, but as a volunteer, you're pretty much have to be available whenever you can. So Karen, what was your experience with this? Did that
It's very similar, and I think it also depends on your level of passion for the job. Mm-hmm. And my husband's got extreme passion. So there's a scanner in the car, in the bedroom, in the kitchen, downstairs, you name it, it's there. And it's loud. But I think also living in town where he works, he feels more obligated off duty to respond to bigger incidents. I mean, he's not going for every random, automatic alarm or something. Or he knows that it's just right up the hill. He could get there before even, anyone would.
Sure.
And I appreciate that and I admire that. However, if it's in the middle of a family dinner, which is rare because the three of us are going in different directions, I'll shoot a look like, really? Like, what's, I don't want anyone to, suffer. However, we would be if you left. And sometimes the look like, not right now, works. Other times, like I said before, it is what it is. We carry on, we understand. And, it's not like he's going off to do something fun, where he's putting that in front of us, we understand that. So it's definitely a reality, the scanners, the, feeling of obligation to respond.
Linda, have you found this become a point of friction in relationships?
Well, it was a point of friction for me personally. I used to be married to the owner of the scanner at the Wilton Volunteer Ambulance Corps. He was the president of it, and he did the driving. It's a very small group. And I can remember having a really severe attack of sciatica one Saturday evening, and we went to the ER, it was diagnosed, blah, blah, came home with painkillers on the couch, the scanner goes off and he says, I'll see you later. It is a huge source of friction. And I think you're right. I think when you have it in the town where you live, you feel compelled to go. And if you're, a chief, you feel even more compelled to go. And it's distressing.
Mm-hmm. I'll add in a little aside about my volunteer days. We bought the house next to a firehouse. So you can only imagine what it was like when, I would not only hear the tones, but see the engine go out and, be very, well, all the drills were next door. A lot of parties were next door. So my wife was completely, there was no break for her at all. Like it was like, full on 24/7. I was all in with it, and she was, bless her, she was great about it. But, I'm not sure that every spouse would have been that, that forgiving and that understanding. So, not necessarily a good thing to live next to the firehouse.
For you, maybe.
Well, what I want to know is, did you move next to the firehouse or were you a member already?
We moved up from New York City and with a little trepidation bought the house next to the firehouse thinking, is this going to be, a problem and a nuisance? But right. I did get somebody invited me to come to a barbecue, and from there they invited me to a drill, and I just kept saying, well, this is interesting, I'll check it out a little further and a little further. And that's really, my gateway into the whole first responder community. And it turned out to be a wonderful thing. But again, I spent a lot of time as I moved up the ranks, getting more involved as an officer than having to run drills and put more time into that and go to meetings, put more time into that. So there's a lot of, offline things that responders mm-hmm. get involved with too, if they're becoming more involved as leaders. And that's another piece that maybe you can speak to that, Bonnie, because obviously you're, as a leader, you must go to other meetings and other events that are besides just responding to calls, right?
Yeah, it's riding your shift, it's doing the calls, but it's personnel issues, in-house. It's being that face of your agency or one of the main big faces of your agency. When something happens on a call, interfacing with patients' families, the hospital, any other agency in town. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and even just the trainings and drills. I know they come up all the time, like, oh, go to this weekend away, go to this conference. And that all can be really hard for spouses too. Because again, it's this full package that comes with so many accessories. And let's also be honest here, a lot of responders become addicted to it, mm-hmm. right? And it becomes everything. So for them to say no is also really hard. Keep that in mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or become addicted to the stress and to the adrenaline piece. Mm-hmm. So Linda, what do you recommend when people, you know, you're working with, seem to have so much, connection and addiction, or, you know, just need to get that, that rush. Is there something that they can do to kind of, get addicted to something other than stress and adrenaline?
Like their life? well, you know, we talk a lot about the window of tolerance and how being at that very high level of adrenaline is great. You need that to go on the call, and that's who you are. It's certainly like working in an emergency room or on an acute unit in a psychiatric hospital. I really get that piece of it. But you can't maintain that forever without doing a lot of harm to your body and your relationships. And so we talk a lot about not going, yeah, you don't want that either. You don't want to be numb and disconnected, but you want to sort of be in this level of tolerance where you're on an even keel and where there is a balance in your life. So we work on coping skills to achieve that. But, you know, it's a hard thing to get across because they don't want it in any way. They often fear, when we're talking about EMDR, for instance, that they will lose the edge of their skill and their facility and their ability to respond so quickly and efficiently. And that doesn't happen. But it's hard for them to even entertain the notion of being even. Doesn't fit right.
Karen, any thoughts about that? The kind of juxtaposition of stress adrenaline versus, you know, calm peace and, you know, just chilling out.
I think, again, that might be the, you know, women, men type of thing where women like adrenaline too, and the rush of something that they're really passionate about, but they're more so like to relax or, you know, chill out time and understand the importance of that, where I think men are just go, go, go. And again, like to the task, to the problem that needs to be solved. And, you know, I'll relax. Like Kevin says, I'll sleep when I'm dead, you know? So like, it's a little different.
I have a question for you, Karen. Let's say a newlywed couple came to you and a fire wife came to you and wanted advice. Do you have a few kind of main take homes that you would give her?
The newlywed fire wife? I would probably say what we began talking about before is that it's not a competition of who had the hardest night, you know, when, well, if it's like a 24-hour shift, I'm not sure, you know, what the newlywed's schedule is like, but whenever it is that the spouse comes home, that they're not going to be probably bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and it's got nothing to do with you, but you've got to have a thick skin and know that and tolerate it as best you can. And there are going to be days where, you know, you'll just go off and do your own thing, but there are other days where you'll struggle with it, and that's just the nature of the beast. And again, it's not you, it's just what it is. And so once you can get over that hump, it'll be smoother sailing. I won't say it's smooth sailing all the time because that's just not realistic and you know what it is, but probably something like that.
So not to take it personally.
Right, right. As hard as that is, I mean, much easier to say than to live it.
Absolutely, yeah. Linda, any thoughts?
It's interesting, though, that the wife is often the barometer for when someone really needs to come into treatment. We talked about the level of tolerance, when that anxiety, when that adrenaline rush becomes so profound, there is no coming down. That's when we tell the firefighters their bucket is overflowing from all the stress and all the trauma that they've carried. They recognize that they can't pick up the phone and make that call. It's often the wife that makes the call. And I used to be sort of, well, he's got to call me. I don't do that anymore. When the wife calls, it's still a 911 call and we get that person in right away.
I have one more question for you guys. And it's kind of an interesting one. Now we've been talking about responders and spouses, civilian spouses, but what about the combination of a first responder and another first responder in a relationship, or maybe a first responder and a nurse or someone in the medical field? What are your thoughts about the dynamics? Does it work? Is it something that you'd recommend, or do you know people that are able to do it successfully, Bonnie?
Yeah, in fact, I see both, right? I see people who do it really, really well, and then I see people who have extreme challenges or maybe end up divorced because of that. I think that because people are at work a lot, they're more likely to meet a significant other there, right? Let's face the reality of lives. I wouldn't advise against it. I think it's a natural thing and it's a beautiful thing. I just think that for those couples, they're going to need to really have strong, strong communication. Mm-hmm. And because their schedules will rule their lives so much, I think they have to be very, very diligent and very, very creative about when are we talking and when are we seeing each other and when do we have time to nurture our relationship. Because without that, it will get lost with the schedules and it will go away. So I think those couples in particular have to pay special attention to the communication and carve out time for it.
Linda, any thoughts?
I would agree with what Bonnie said. I've also seen couples who have mastered it. They're like soulmates. I find that a lot with firefighters and nurses. Mm-hmm. Really get it. They understand the emergent nature of the calls and the scheduling difficulties and the exhaustion. And we don't have any stats yet on any of that since COVID. So it's possible that it's really changed. But I have seen positives where they just get it. It's really very heartwarming. But not to take away from what Bonnie said, because I see that too.
Mm-hmm. So as we wrap up, Karen, any thoughts, anything we didn't speak about that you'd like to add?
No, I just think that just going with what you were just talking about with a first responder and another first responder relationship and about scheduling, I think that with a first responder and just a civilian like me as a spouse, scheduling is super important because the spouses often feel like our schedule revolves around their schedule, and in most cases it does, but you can see, oh, okay, well, there's going to be 3 days off. So here in those days, we're going to, you know, have some family time, or we are going to do those date nights and go to dinner, and to be really proactive with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, you know, you feel like you're living by their schedule, but that's okay because you can still schedule in your time and important things that everyone can be involved in.
Thank you. And Bonnie, any closing thoughts?
I just really want to thank Karen, because I know it's hard to speak out as a significant other, and we're shining the spotlight on you, but I'm just so grateful that not only did we have you in our significant other group that Linda and I ran, we learned so much from that, but we learned so much from you. And I think this conversation will help a lot of people think about things.
I hope so. Thank you.
And Linda, any closing thoughts?
No, I would echo that. I think, you know, it makes me want, this segment makes me want to get the group going again.
Well, perhaps things now's a different time than it was
Maybe.
back when you were starting it. Or it's yeah, I applaud you for having the concept and the intention of doing such a group. And I hope that you're able to restart it and support spouses. And we do appreciate spouses. I know I could speak personally that as a responder, having been volunteering career, that I could not have done all the things I did, including going to the fire academy for 14, 16 weeks and being away for that entire time without a spouse at home who was, you know, really stepping up and holding down the fort and supporting me in everything I did. So it is so important, so critical. And to have, you know, have a home life where things are more or less working without you having to worry about it all the time makes it that much easier to, you know, to go out and do the job that responders are required to do. So my hat is off to all spouses who are supporting responders and supporting families and doing it. Much, much appreciation to them.
I think you should be part of our presentation. When back.
All right, let's talk. Anyway, thank you so much, Karen, Linda, and Bonnie, for being part of this discussion today on Responder Resilience. It's been a real pleasure to have this conversation.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you, David.
I'd like to remind everybody to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're also on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc. We're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, and our website is respondertv.com, where you can catch all our past episodes. So we want to wish everybody a great evening. Stay safe. Be kind to yourself. Take care.
Thank you, David.